Corinthians chapter 4, who would like to read the first 7 verses? I think we're going to go with someone who can speak a little bit better. Go ahead, Alan.
Therefore, my beloved, long for brethren, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, brother. I implore Euodia, and I force you to be of the same mind in the Lord. And I urge you also, true companion, to help these women who labor with me in the gospel, and Clement also, and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always, again I say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication and thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds through Christ Jesus.
Okay. So this is kind of a summary of what he's been getting to. We've already kind of talked about this before. He starts with what's called a transitional verse. And this is basically by using the word therefore. He's like, I said all this, and because I said all this, therefore, I'm now getting to probably the main reason he decided to write this letter. And that was because of two sisters, probably Christian sisters, Eudora and Syntyche. Syntyche. I am terrible at pronouncing Bible names. Oh.
Euodia.
At
least that's the way it would be.
I don't know. I could look at it in Greek, but it's probably the same. Greek, phonetically, Greek is very similar to English. It's not, they have a few sounds that we don't, but most of them are very similar. So we have these two sisters, and what do we know about them? They're arguing. And so he uses, there's a few phrases I want to point out here. And the first one is in verse, verse 2, labored side by side, whose names are in the book of life. In verse 3, those are verses 3. And agree, he uses the word agree. True companion is another phrase. In the gospel, What are all these words or phrases have in common?
They're positives.
Unity. They're all about unity. And so this is Paul's main theme is, okay, we have these two sisters who should be in unity. Yes? But they're not. Why are they arguing?
We don't know.
And frankly, does it matter? No, it doesn't really matter. So what matters is that they need to be able to work past these differences, right? Okay, so how many people here have ever had a problem with someone else in this room? Someone else in this room. Yes. Or maybe not in this room. Maybe it had a problem with someone else in a church you've attended. Okay. And so how do you deal with those particular things? Or how did you deal with it in that situation? How many of you have ignored it? Ignoring it is the,
I don't know if I call it the easiest way. I would certainly call it the less confrontational way. You don't want to make waves. Okay. Mm-hmm. Some of it is petty. I have to imagine that, but even that, we get caught up in the pettiness, right? I'm not talking about anybody in particular, I'm just saying, in general, people get caught up in the pettiness. So Paul doesn't address what this issue is about. So it could be something serious, like maybe one of them is trying to steal the other one's husband. Or maybe it's because they had a disagreement about something that had nothing to do with church, and they're bringing it inside the church. Okay. Well, Paul doesn't tell us what this particular issue is, but he does tell us what the solution to this particular issue is, and this is being united. And how does he tell us to be united? Well, we go all the way back to chapter 2, verse 2. Complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. In verse 3, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in the humility count others more significant than yourselves. Verse 4, let each of you look not to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. So this is Paul's point. He's already established how they can be united, and that is to not be selfish, look towards love, look towards unity. Yep, see, she agrees. Abigail knows what she's talking about. And so, when Paul gets to this point, he's already said, okay, so, I have two ways that I can approach this. Okay, I can approach this as someone from discipline, or I can approach this as someone from love. Because Paul recognizes his authority and inside this church. And probably his authority as an apostle. And so he comes together and he says, I know this is happening, and this has reached me, and so now I feel like I'm going to say something about it. But I'm not going to deal with it like I normally deal with it. Paul, I like to think of Paul as a blunt instrument. If Paul has something to say, he's going to say it. But here, he takes a very, very different approach. He says, hey, this is how you guys should be like. And then, sisters, this is what you need to aspire to. And those around you, this is what you need to aspire to. And you, those around you need to help. So he's approaching it from this position of love. Help encourage them while they encourage one another. And frankly, I don't know if I like this. Because personally, I would rather just butt out. If you two are fighting, I think it'd be easier for me to butt out. Because I know the minute I start talking to you, I'm probably going to make one of you... I'm sorry, I'm just using you two.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I know that the minute I start trying to help you, one or both of you are going to see me as taking a side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, you've made it into unity then. Get your little bucket of popcorn. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think patience is a good word here. There's sometimes you have to walk away. You can't always deal with something. If you're upset, it helps to walk away. As long as you know you're going to come back to the issue, because you still have to confront the issue. But you need to understand that whatever's going on, there's another side to the story. And I think this is part of what Paul wants them to come to, is this unity, is them telling both their sides of the story. I think I read somewhere that 9 out of 10 communication problems are because people aren't listening. Anyway, so that's basically, I think, what Paul's getting to it here. It's just, you guys are going on, you have to press forward, and I want you guys, if you're having trouble with looking for a way to do it, look back to what I said in chapter 2, and that is be in that mindset of Christ. Easier said than done, right? I think if I could be in the mindset of Christ, I'm not sure how much I would need him. Unless it's me. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead. Doubling down on a bad argument just to prove a point. Is that kind of what you're saying? Yeah. Some people like to argue for argue's sake. I had a friend tell me that once years ago. It's like, why are you arguing with me? Yeah, I already agree with you. And I'm like, oh, I must have missed that. I think that our pride does get in the way, but also our temptation to be competitive does too. Pride is. If you ever read Dante's Inferno, pride is ultimately what led to Satan's downfall. Dante's Inferno. It's a really old book. I think it's like 500-600 years old. it's a fiction book, but yeah. When it first came out.
Yeah. I have a story with that. A few years ago, I was in a class. I don't even remember what the class was about. But the teacher said that a very common misconception, he gave a statistic, and it's a wrong statistic. It's based on projections, not actual fat data. And the 50% of all marriages end in divorce, I'm sure all of you have heard that. That's not true. There's no data to back that up. It was based on projections in the 1980s at the current divorce rate. And he said that to give a point, and I said, well, that's not really true. And then I didn't hear the end of it for like a month. Not from him, but from other people in the class. Like, why did you tell him that? And I'm like, well, I thought I was just offering a correction. But I didn't think about the implications of that. And so I thought later that if I'm ever going to teach in a setting with people who are not students, then I'm not going to ever tell them that they're wrong. And sometimes, I don't think anybody here has ever done this. No, I'm pretty sure nobody here has ever done this. Is sometimes people just say things that are really far out there. And how do you deal with something like that? A lot of times, sometimes I'll just smile and nod, and I'm just like, well, that's interesting. That's what the Chinese used to tell me. That's interesting. and you just kind of have to move on, because there's really no point to argue with it. It serves no purpose other than to, like we were talking about earlier, just to prove you're right. Now, if I tell you that's interesting, it doesn't necessarily mean that I think your ideas are out there. I'm going to say it to you every time now, Buckley. if you really want to know, I will tell you if I think you're wrong. Because I won't lie to you, but I'm not going to try to make it. I've decided because of that, it's just better to move on than it is to make someone uncomfortable. That's kind of like what he's talking about in the book that we're going through. Yes, Kay. We all have kind of different ways that we deal with it as well, too. And for me, I decided that I always accept the premise that I could be wrong. I think that's what makes it easier for me, is if I accept the premise that I could be wrong, I know that I can look at something logically instead of emotionally. I think that's part of where pride comes in, is where we let our emotions get the better of us. Go ahead, Sam. Sorry? Oh, short little story.
And it's got me, because that's when I eat, you know, family members, and that's why I try to pick up, because that's important.
victory? That's an interesting point. What's that story about the king and his clothes? They weren't really clothes. And so... Yeah, that one. And then the little girl goes and finally tells him that he's not wearing clothes. At some point, I think maybe you kind of have to step in there to save the person from more embarrassment. The army is an interesting place because a lot of people in the army, but military, will let you do something stupid just to laugh at you. I had a place ask me to go find this left-handed tool, and I was 99% sure that there was no such thing. But I had this was back before I had a cell phone with internet that I could easily look it up and say, hey, yeah, I know you're pulling my leg. And so I didn't know what to do because this person of authority is obviously telling me to go find this tool that I'm pretty sure he's joking about, but what do I do in that case? I could either be defiant about it, or I could be like, okay, well, I walked around the building a few times, and I said I couldn't find it. And then he's like, well, go ask this person. So I pretended to go ask this person, and I said, he sent me over here. And frankly, it was a waste of time, but I was getting paid for it either way, so it didn't matter to me. That's basically what he did, was he sent me on a snipe hunt. A white line. Well, back to the text. It would be really, really different if someone like Paul came in here and told us to watch this door. I bet all of us would be like, okay, well, this is Paul telling us to watch this door, so we better watch this door because maybe something is going to happen. But Paul talks about it in terms of humility. He says, those who have labored side by side with me, my fellow workers, so he puts himself on par with them. We may put Paul on a pedestal, but he doesn't treat himself as being on a pedestal. I think it says a lot about the ministry leaders. We might give them the authority to make decisions on behalf of us, but we still expect them to be part of us. Verse 5, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. Let it be known to everyone. Don't send them on snipe hunt. So when you get older, Sam, and you climb up those, you add those bars. or when you make it to your next level of work, when you're no longer where you're at now. Or some of you, this is probably not even going to be an issue to you, because you're well past those stages in your life. But it can be issues for us in the church when we're dealing with the other people. Sometimes I think it helps to leave emotion at the door. We are very emotional people, and it's understood that a lot of our faith comes from our emotions. And so when we want to do things like argue or want to press a point, we tend to throw our whole being into it. And I think that's part of what Paul is also saying, is you need to be reasonable. We'll kind of leave those things. Check them at the door. You look like you have something to say, Mark. Mm-hmm.
there's a political person who's famous for saying that facts don't care about your feelings. But what I've noticed from that is feelings don't care about your facts. Yeah. I think those two things can be very hard for us to reconcile, as not even as a Christian, but just as a normal person. The Lord is at hand, so he's starting to close his letter. Do not be anxious about anything. Well, again, easier said than done. My lesson today is about something that I have found has been making me more and more anxious as time goes on. It used to be, I never ever thought about it till like 2 years ago. And now I don't think a week goes by that I don't think about it at least once. Are there things that make you guys anxious? Is there anybody here who's not an anxious person? Or not an anxious person, but doesn't worry about something? And yet what's one of the things Jesus tells us? Jesus tells us not to worry. But he tells us that, Paul tells us that the best way not to be anxious is through prayer and supplication. And thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And if you have that, the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus forever. All right. And finally, he closes up this section. He says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. I don't think he's saying these are the only things you can think about, but I think he's saying that these are the most important things you can think about. Especially in how they connect to God and Jesus. Because there are a lot of worldly... I think that second thing is important because there are a lot of worldly things that are also commendable and worthy and excellent. But in the context of what we're learning here, that these are... Yes, sorry. Yeah. Part of it is we're responsible as well. Paul talks about not getting married because he's worried about thinking about those things instead of the things he should be thinking about. Yeah. And that's not to say that those aren't noble things to think about. It's just he's saying that it is a distraction when it comes to thinking about God. Does someone over here have their hand up? Okay.
I think this is a good starting place. We should be able to finish Philippians next week. I'm excited. We've been in this class for probably a while now. Yeah. And so then we're going to move on to another topic. I was actually thinking of doing Hebrews next. I have never done a study on Hebrews, and I thought that would be great. So let's close in prayer. Dear most Heavenly Father,